I'm Chris.
And I'm Kylie. And this is Redefining Resilience,
where we explore what it means to build a resilient lifestyle
so you can thrive in any and every situation. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being here. And for our audience, this is another Chris that we have on the show, in addition to our fabulous co-host, my Chris. Chris Roach is with us from Chris Roach Wellness, based out of Brownsburg, Indiana. And Chris, I thank you so much, one, for being here. And two, can you tell us just a little bit about who you are and what you do? And we're here to talk about all things mindfulness, meditation, breath work, all things related to that sector of clear and present thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. And first off, I certainly want to thank you guys for having me on your podcast. I'm excited to be here and to have this conversation. You know, it's something that I'm very passionate about. And I guess a little bit about my backstory is I got into health and wellness after living a very unhealthy lifestyle as a young man. I was in the military at the time. And, you know, I was smoking and gained a lot of weight. And surprisingly, in the military, you can do that. And, you know, I decided I came home on leave, went on a bike ride with my dad, and he destroyed me. And I'm like, I can't let this happen. So I decided this was the time to, you know, make a lifestyle change. And I quit smoking and I started working out more, started exercising. And I really got passionate about learning about how the body works and how training and physiology functions. And I was reading all these books about, you know, training for cycling, and I got into racing. And that really led me to losing a lot of weight, getting healthy. And all the guys at the station are asking me, hey man, what are you doing? And I'd love to get healthier, and I want to get, you know, get off of smoking. And so that's, you know, I was just giving them answers based off of my own experience and what I was learning, and they were getting results as well. And I was like, wow, I love seeing other people learning from my example and what I have to share and turning their lives around in some way or another. And so I was up for reenlistment, or it was time to get out. And I decided I wanted to go and pursue exercise science. And at that time, I wanted to be a bicycling coach. And that led me into getting my degree in exercise science. And fortunately for me, early on after I graduated, I was working at a hospital-based fitness center. And I came across an article that was all about holistic fitness, which I'd never heard of. I had already started a meditation practice at this point, and I was interested in things like yoga and Eastern philosophy, and it really resonated with me. And so I was very fortunate to have a teacher named Steve Ilg, who taught me all the things about how to integrate things like yoga, meditation, some breath work, nutrition, and exercise. And going back to put it in context, you know, we're talking the mid-1990s. And at that point in time, anything yoga and meditation was for the granola crowd. It was for the woo-woo people and that sort of thing. So for me to go into the gym and show my clients, hey, check out this meditation or check out this yoga thing, and they just thought I was insane. And fast forward a few years later, I got my yoga teacher certification. And so now I'm in yoga studios and I'm seeing these folks who are deep into yoga, but they're really not all that healthy. There was a lot of things missing, I felt like, from their lifestyle. So now I'm talking to them about, hey, we should do some strength training, you know, maybe do some cardio. And they thought I was insane. You know, we're yoga people, you know, and now it's in every gym. It's very mainstream, of course. And so through that whole journey, I just am I don't want to say an addict for learning, but I'm just very passionate about learning for myself. And if I learn something that's beneficial for me, then just by virtue of what I do, it translates into sharing it with my clients. So I've just pursued all different facets, I guess. You know, early on, it was just personal training certifications and things of that sort. And from there, it was my yoga teacher certification and seeking out other teachers and other styles of just being healthier and really learning through that process that most of what we're on a journey really relates to is what's going on between our ears. And there's the other side of that coin is a lot of folks that are deep into meditation, they ignore their physical body. And so that tends to give out on them. And, you know, so it was just this whole perception change that I was fortunate to have to pursue, you know, other modalities. You know, I got deep into CrossFit at one point. I owned a couple of CrossFit gyms. I'd owned a yoga studio prior to that. I got into kettlebells, and, you know, some of the things I could see were kind of trendy, but other things I could see were very valuable tools. And so for me, it was just giving me more tools to apply to myself and this journey of inner exploration through physical means as well. So that it started to show up for me in understanding that, you know, whenever I got into ultra marathon running, that the things I was learning through meditation and mindfulness and being present was invaluable. You know, when you guys are talking about resilience, it was phenomenal that I'm out there testing my limits. Mm-hmm. And the physical body will always give out before the mind gives out. You know, the body always says stop before the mind will, you know, ultimately have a say in it. And so I found the more resilient I became, the better I was at controlling the thoughts between my ears, my mindset, and, you know, just being able to be, it's kind of a common phrase now, that saying of being comfortable with the uncomfortable. And the more I could do that, it was allow me to be, you know, I feel like when we talk about resilience, not to get into your field too much, but I feel like it's adversity that creates resilience. That's a big factor in being resilient as a human being. And I think it also applies then all of these things I was doing and sharing with other people. It really, for me, came to the surface that it's just being able to be a better human being and to be able to serve other people, to be more useful, as opposed to being potentially some sort of a liability. You know, if you're not healthy and you're reliant on other people, you can't really contribute to your community and the people around you. And as a husband and as a parent, and even as a grandfather, which is crazy, you know, it just really helped me to show up better in all those areas as well. So I don't know if I answered all your questions there, but, you know, through that journey, it's led to this. You know, I've worked as an independent contractor. I've done corporate wellness for the better part of 30 years, but I also have my own personal business where now it's a lot of it's online training. And I still do some in-person training as well. And I do everything from teaching people yoga, meditation, breath work, nutrition, and really just trying to meet people where they are and initially giving them a lot of what they think they want, but knowing really what they need and starting to dose them with some of that. And ultimately they kind of see it for themselves and, you know, kind of jump into that end of the pool with me as well.
That's so cool.
I literally don't think I could agree with you anymore about any of all those statements.
I love to hear that. Thank you.
One thing I think is fascinating that you just said was you have to kind of slowly lead your clients into more things. And I know that a lot of people, when they attack a goal, especially a physical fitness goal, it's one thing. I want to be a marathon runner. I want to run a 5K. I want to learn yoga. I want to be a CrossFitter. They don't understand that. And it's hard to understand that every part of fitness creates a better human. They all Absolutely. Have their benefits. So I know that coming from the strength world, powerlifting and strongman, CrossFit gets a bad rap. There's like, it's like the black, you know, the dark side. So
yeah.
But what's neat Absolutely. Is to see these athletes come from CrossFit and just dominate. They're just so good at these movements and they're so mm-hmm. fast and they're so quick. And the big, you know, bulky strongman gets frustrated. And it's like they're training the whole modality. They're training the whole human. So mm-hmm. they are actually better all-around athletes. But to train a quote-unquote newbie to understand mm-hmm. like, hey, listen, it's not just bench press and squat. It's breath work. It's meditation. It's finding a vision with this whole concept. Do you ever find that you have to do more vision coaching up front than you do just straight into the weights?
At this point in my career, yes. I feel like early on, I would take anybody that was willing to work with me. I was saying yes to everybody. You know, you're trying to build your business, you're trying to have an income, and you're trying to build a name for yourself or all those things that come with it. And at this stage of my career, none of that matters to me. What matters to me is really, truly helping people. And so at this stage, that's where I really like to start with people. You know, we'll certainly we'll start with maybe a fitness assessment, or we'll talk about goals and things like that. And I always initially have that conversation with them of, let's look at this bigger picture. You know, what do you have going on in your life? What do you do for a career? Do you have a significant other? Do you have family? Do you have children? And what's going on in your world before we even really get into any conversations about what a training protocol or a training program might even look like? So absolutely, I think that once they understand where they are in the big picture and how all of that will impact their training. And then we can talk more realistic about goals, but also then what does that vision look like? Because if they can start to formulate that in their mind and see that in their mind, and I can help them paint that picture for themselves, certainly the outcomes are going to be much greater. And also I find then they become far more receptive to, okay, you're telling me that you are stressed to the max, you know, you're working hard, you're a business person or a stay-home parent or whatever that might be. But most of what I hear people telling me now is just how stressed they are. And depending on the age and some other factors, I'm like, you know, the worst thing I could do right now is throw you into the deep end of a hardcore training program that you think you need right now to lose the weight or to look a certain way. Let's address some of these other things as well. And I've found that's where I work with people at this stage. And I've found, I wish I knew that 20 years ago, because the outcomes are far greater. And I feel like they're more understanding, more patient. They trust the process more because they have a grasp of what that vision is at that point.
I joke with all new trainers that I talk to. I say, you do realize your job is to make everybody's life much harder.
Like, yeah.
If you do it right, you're going to press the envelope. And to press the envelope physically sometimes is a lot more than people want.
Absolutely.
I had a gentleman not too long ago. We sat down and talked about training protocol. And he's like, well, how many days do you lift? And I said, man, I only lift 4. Anything over 4 is just too much, 4 days a week. And he said, well, I want 6. I said, that's a lot, bud. I mean, I'll write it for you, but it's too much. So he goes in, works out 2 days and never does again.
Yeah.
So I think addressing the mentality behind it, the expectations, the actual workload, the mental stress that this is going to cause. And like you're saying, what's the stimulus in your life? Because I'm about to add a lot. So how much can you handle? You know, you got...
Absolutely.
You're on the verge of a divorce. This is probably not what we need to be doing right now. You know, we need to take care of the home base. But yeah, how do you correlate mindfulness into your clients that maybe haven't heard about it before or think it's far into the spectrum woo-woo? Because I run into the woo-woo crowd pretty hard. So,
yes, absolutely. And for me, I think that, you know, mindfulness and the concept has become a bit more mainstream these days, for sure. And that said, it still is very woo-woo for a lot of people. And for me, it's just helping them to understand that mindfulness is just paying attention. You know, in a nutshell, it's awareness. That's all mindfulness is. And when I share that with folks, it's really in a training session is always a great opportunity when they're in a set and I can see they're maybe really trying to push themselves or maybe in the yoga studio even. And I can just see that look in their face, that intensity, and they're gutting it out and things like that. You know, after they finish that set, I'll ask them, you know, what were you thinking in that moment? You know, where was your mind? Or if they're doing a cardio session, I'll say, you know, what were you thinking about? Where was your mind? And that catches them off guard. And they're like, oh, you know, it could be any number of things. But oftentimes their mind is somewhere else, or they're thinking about how awful this is and how, you know, it's so hard and I'm really pushing myself and how bad it hurts. And I will share with them, how about we just focus on your breathing during this set? You know, no matter how intense it is, no matter how hard it is, no matter how hard this yoga pose is for you, just focus on your breathing. And when your mind is going somewhere else, just like training a puppy on the leash, give it a little tug and bring it back right here, right now, and just be with your breathing and be in your body. And it helps them to understand how that shuts out all the drama that our mind likes to go into. And then I can tell them, take that into your daily life. You know, when you're sitting in traffic, one of my assignments I give people, I learned from one of my early teachers, was set an alarm on your watch to go off every hour, on your phone, go off every hour. And when it goes off, just check out, how is your breathing? Are you breathing short, shallow breaths? Are you sitting up nice, good posture? Are you all slouched over? And what were you thinking about? And just bring you back to that moment. And it's really just that simple with people to get them out of that woo-woo mentality of just saying, you know, mindfulness is just being aware and present, you know, and law enforcement, military, it's situational awareness, you know, being aware of what's going on around you, being aware of where your thoughts are. That ultimately it's helping us to train our mind to be more present.
Why is that important?
That's a great question. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of rabbit holes I was thinking about in this conversation we could go into. And a lot of this, I did want to preface a lot of this conversation with kind of giving credit to where credit is due. And mindfulness, meditation, breath work, all of it as we know it now really originated with the yogis back, you know, and oftentimes there's evidence that shows a lot of this information was written form 500 to 1,000 years ago. And some of it verbally translated is credited being thousands of years old when it comes to a lot of these practices. And from there, it kind of spread into other regions around the world. And so you see it showing up in the Buddhist cultures and later in the United States, Europe, and so on. So I guess in a nutshell, to answer your question, why it's important is that our minds are wired, genetically wired, to think worst case scenario. That's what helped us survive, you know, in our Paleolithic time periods and stuff. That's our brains are just wired. Our DNA is wired to think of all the different scenarios and think of all the negative outcomes in order to be prepared for those. In our modern culture, because we're so inundated and we're so upregulated in our nervous system, you know, we really start to get overloaded. You know, then we're scrolling through our phones, we're on social media, we're getting these little dopamine hits. And so our mind, by virtue, becomes very unregulated. And so we're not, I would tell people, you're not living in reality, you're living in an unreality. All the thoughts and in addition to that, you know, we want to rein that in to be more aware and present of what's going on around us, you know, because we're always living in the future. We're living in the past, not living here and now. And so we're missing out on everything that's happening in this moment. You know, we're living in these virtual worlds oftentimes. And I think ultimately, as a human being, by being more mindful, you're more present with those around you. You know, having this conversation with you guys, or a conversation with a client, a friend, my spouse, my children, if I'm scrolling through my phone, if I'm sort of listening to them, but I'm also thinking of a million different things, then that's going to have a heavy impact on really understanding what people are saying and being engaged in the conversation. And I think ultimately, you know, that translates then into, even if you're driving your car, you know, if your mind is a million miles away, you're not paying attention to the car that's coming up behind you or the car next to you that you didn't even notice was in your blind spot. And so it just translates in so many ways and has so many applications.
I think it bleeds into depression as well.
Absolutely. I mean,
if you think that no matter what's going on, you've got a million things to think about, the past and the future, you're on your phone, you're connecting very little with the people around you, you have no real valuable relationships. We interviewed somebody a couple of weeks ago, teaches yoga, Lexi's her name, and she was so in it. Like she was here while we were talking, just like you are. Like this is all of it. 100% of the conversation is right here. I mean, you get so much more energy from the person you're talking to and so much more dialogue. And I feel like you really connect. And there's millions of Americans that are connected here on their phone, but not to the people around them. So they feel lost and lonely.
Well, and we're depriving ourselves of the oxytocin that we get from having real relationships. The oxytocin makes us feel loved and connected. And when we're living in a virtual reality, like you mentioned, we deprive ourselves of real connection. It's a false connection. And, you know, just from your experience and what you've seen with your clients, Chris, what's the risk? If we live in that virtual world, what kind of symptoms do you see clients and people you interact with exhibiting?
Oh, that's a great question. And I love that you brought up the conversation, not only about being present and everything with people around you, but the brain chemistry side. When I got into doing this, there was very little research on it back in the 90s. And now we have incredible technology and research programs around all of these protocols. And it comes down to, you know, the yogis talked about certain qualities that were very, at that time, intangible, that, you know, we can talk about the chakras, for example. Yeah, it's an ancient concept. Well, now we know that all those chakras align with nerve complexes in your body, the sacral complex, the brachial, the cerebral, and so those perfectly align and overlap with one another. And as we've moved even further, we're understanding from a neuroscience perspective, all of this stuff, the brain chemistry, the things that are dumped into your system. And so when we are upregulated chronically, you know, that puts things like cortisol, adrenaline, things that are very degenerative to your health. And so that accelerates the aging process. And that leads us into, as you said, you guys were talking about depression. You know, when you're chronically upregulated, when you're chronically ruminating, when you're chronically stressed out, the impact on your health is just unbelievable. And I think the best way I can explain it too is when I was a trainer in the early days, you know, 90s, early 2000s, even into the mid 2000s, perhaps, someone in their 50s would come to me, maybe 60s would come to me, and they're displaying a lot of these things we're talking about, depression, early aging symptoms, all sorts of health problems, type 2 diabetes, heart, you know, what my doctor said, my cholesterol is through the roof and my blood pressure is through the roof. Well, the reality is now we're seeing that stuff in people in their 30s, sometimes even younger. And in my opinion, that is a direct result, not only just sedentary lifestyles and probably an unhealthy diet. I feel like so much of that is related to what's going on in neurochemistry. And so with a mind that is unchecked and untethered, and we are heavily invested in so much technology and disconnected, that to me is, I think, one of the leading factors in mental health. And so now I have people all across the age spectrum dealing with these chronic conditions. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I see with people coming to me now.
I personally am on a mission to help people learn natural ways to mitigate the risk of anxiety and depression and other mental health issues out there. And mindfulness, meditation, and breath work is probably the greatest medicine that we can take to help us regulate our nervous system and avoid depression and spiraling into anxiety. And I'm curious to know how you explain this, but I think of depression and anxiety as these are repeated thought patterns over a long, long period of time. You are thinking chronically in the past, which is depression, and chronically worrying about the future, which is anxiety. And the doctors we go to just want to put us on pills to numb the pain or numb the sensations we're feeling, but it doesn't actually cure the problem.
Absolutely. The research now is showing that modalities like breath work, for example, there's a ton of research on that now, that it performs better than medication for people that are struggling with depression, anxiety. There's research showing meditation does the same thing. So when you incorporate these things, the outcomes are equal to or greater than traditional talk therapy. Nothing against those things, for sure. I've done those things myself. I highly encourage those. But when you can maybe even couple those, depending on the person. But yeah, I mean, it just shows that these modalities, when done with a professional that can guide you, I wouldn't recommend it necessarily check out a YouTube video and think I'm going to cure my anxiety and depression with this modality I'm seeing on YouTube or something like that. But when you're working with a professional in this area, the outcomes are showing that they're better than traditional talk therapy and prescription drugs. And that's a threat, of course, you know, because there's no money in that. And I don't mean to go down that rabbit hole or that route. It's just the reality of it. You know, it doesn't have a funding to support it, you know, and it doesn't have millions and millions of dollars to be made from it. The reality is, you know, with our healthcare system, who knows what that broken system will look like in the future. And so I feel like with your mission, and very much like my mission, is to share these, because once I teach it to you, you don't have to see me again. You know, let's get you a program that's working for you, get you to where you need to be. And then you have all the tools that you need, and you'll know what breathwork technique to apply for various situations. You'll have a meditation practice that's going to, you know, which we haven't even really delved into yet, because that's when we get into the real meat, if you will, of training your mind, you know, of really the neuroplasticity, the research around that, showing how we can change the brain and how it functions. You know, your thoughts if you're constantly ruminating, you're worried about the past, or worried about the future, you have these pathways and these neurotransmitters that are ingrained. As the saying goes, the neurons that fire together wire together. Well, it also goes to show that those can be disconnected and new pathways can be created, you know, and then that's not woo-woo anymore. Nobody can say that. There's way too much research that supports that. And so I think it's very exciting to see, and I would be curious to see what it looked like another 20 years with more people like you guys that are sharing this information.
So meditation, let's talk about that for a little bit, because I can probably come up with a lengthy list of people who have told me, oh, I tried meditation, it doesn't work. What would you say to those folks?
I'm sorry, I get a kick out of that. It's great because it's the analogy I use. Let's say somebody's 45 years old and they come to me and they're like, you know, I tried this meditation. I did it for maybe they even did it for 30 days. Maybe they did it one time. And so I didn't really see any benefit. And I'm like, okay, but you also came to me and you want to lose 40 pounds. And you're telling me that you've never really been very active. You know, you gain this weight over a span of time. Point is that you've lived for 45 years without ever sitting with your thoughts, without ever practicing meditation. And just like you can't expect to lose, you know, the 40 pounds that you want to lose in 30 days or in a week, meditation takes time as well. You know, that's what they call the meditation practice. That's literally what it is. It's the practice of doing the meditation and trusting the process. And what I found, going back to what we were talking of earlier, that people are so upregulated, so overtaxed with stress and everything. I've found that for a lot of people, I don't even recommend meditation up front, because it's, for some people, it's very inaccessible because their mind is just going 10 million miles an hour. And so when I ask them to sit for even 5 to 10 minutes, nothing really is going to change for them, you know, because they're just in that mind and that keyed up state, perhaps. So that's where the breath work piggybacks on there, because if I can get them to do some breath work can impact your central nervous system in a matter of minutes. And most people, given the proper practice, will see a shift in their heart rate, their mood, their stress levels. Everything can be altered, you know, when done properly. And so to answer your question, though, I think it is, you know, just the idea that, you know, it takes time to get unhealthy. So it takes time to get, healthy. I think that's the biggest element there.
You mean there's no magic pill?
Yes, I'm developing that, and I'll let you know when it's out. And I will be a trillionaire, the first trillionaire in America, I think, if we had that magic pill. Although one of my clients just told me today that she heard about a new pill they're developing that is supposed to help you build lean body mass and do all these things so you don't have to work out anymore. And I'm like, of course there is, you know? I mean, yeah. We want the easy fix. So there is no easy fix. But I think that too is why a lot of people do go to a doctor and, you know, they tell them they're depressed and they write them a prescription. It's like, cool, this is going to fix the problem. But as you said earlier, it masks the symptoms, but it doesn't resolve the root issues.
So I think we're running into another problem with society when it comes to physical fitness, mental health, especially with sitting quiet in your thoughts. Mm-hmm. One thing I run into, and I'm interested if you run into this, is people, when it comes down to it, want to be able to blame somebody else for it not working. Yeah. They don't want to take personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. And with breath work and meditation and personal training, you can't blame somebody else. You can't point the finger and say, you know, this pill didn't work, or I have these side effects, or this program didn't work, because it's all about implementation. Mm-hmm. And I think that taking that step into personal development is very scary, because we're raised mm-hmm. in a society. I know my generation, and I've got three daughters, especially their generation, it's passing the buck really fast. You know, who can, anybody that says I'm doing something wrong is a hater, as opposed to trying to help me, or maybe I should look at myself and change. Yeah. I'm interested to hear how you coach people through that, mm-hmm. how you coach people into personal responsibility.
Wow, you guys have the best questions. I love it. Yes, I would agree with that 100%, that there is certainly people not wanting to take that personal responsibility combined with the discipline required.
That's a good word. We should probably come back to that. keep going.
Yes. No, absolutely. And as with the younger generations, because I have children that range from the early 30s down to 17. And I especially see it with the younger generation where, as you said, you know, if somebody's pointing out something that probably is something you need to work on, they're being a hater. You know, I'm not feeling validated. All of the terms that are the buzzwords out there now that I can't keep up with. And so my question is always, how's that working for you? You know, how's that working for you? And that might be a Dr. Phil-ism from back in the day, perhaps. I don't know where I picked that up, but it stuck with me. And I feel like when somebody's telling me that it's someone else's fault, the program's not working, things of that nature, you know, when we have the conversation and they want to pass the buck and you know, the blame. And then I that opens the door, and my clients learn quickly that questions open doors. And so then they know what we're getting into. We're going to go deep now, because I do ask the question, you know, so tell me other areas in your life. You know, does this look like anything else that you're dealing with in your life? You know, how is your relationship with your boss at work? Are they a big jerk to you? Are they this? Are they that? And then it's like, okay, what about your relationships? And if there's, as I like to say, a common denominator here, you know, what is that common denominator? Yeah. Right. And they're like, that's me. I'm the common denominator. And then I'm like, okay, so how's that working for you? So how about we talk a little deeper about, you know, personal responsibility, discipline, you know, just taking a different mindset for a change. You know, how about we try a different approach here? And generally, once we go down that route, I've got them kind of where I want them. They're a little raw at that point, a little vulnerable. And I'm like, this is good. This is where we need to be. We need to be vulnerable. We need to take that accountability. We need to accept that maybe some of my choices have not been that great, you know, and maybe I do need to accept that, not in a way to beat yourself with it, right? Not to beat yourself up with your past choices or other things, because that's ultimately a lot of times why we want to pass the buck is, you know, we don't want to feel bad.
Yeah.
And feeling bad is not a bad thing. As you guys know, feeling bad is not a bad thing. Sometimes we need to feel bad in order to make better decisions.
Yeah.
So that's how I try to go that route with them. And sometimes they have regrets asking, you know, when they open those doors, but at the end of the day, they love it. When they get on the other side of it, they're happy.
Yeah.
So we talk a lot about self-inflicted wounds with people. Yeah, bud, you made that decision. It's not their fault. You put everybody in that position. So that's a self-inflicted wound. If you have a new client that's struggling with personal responsibility, do you have like a stair step you start them with, like something small, like, hey, bud, let's just make your bed every morning.
Tiny.
What kind of process do you work people through?
Well, I you guys ask the best questions. So that's been a big change for me over the years, because I'm a deep into the pool guy. So if I'm into something, I just go to the deep end and I figure it out. Whereas I've learned that most people are not that way. And so certainly the baby step approach, going to the shallow end of the pool, works best for most people. And that used to kind of frustrate me, you know, because my ego was in the way. And so I wanted to just push him into the deep end, and that wasn't working. And so for me, the first practice I generally start people with is the breath and posture thing that I mentioned. I assign that to them 3 to 5 times a week, depending on where we're starting. And then I am a big fan of journaling as well. You know, just getting in that habit of daily journaling, even if it's 5 minutes, even if it's just 5 quick gratitudes or something like that. And from there, it really depends on the person. So I have to look at what is their lifestyle? What do they have going on? What degree of discipline do they currently have? What things they already have kind of dialed in? Or is this person just way out in the weeds and we got to start in a different point? And so that would look different from one person to the other. But to answer your question, it's the things, as you mentioned, for some people it is wake up every morning, make your bed. You know, even if you're going to get back in it in a couple of hours, make your bed, you know, and just looking at different things that they do. For some people, I want you to meal prep every week. That's your discipline. That's your homework. It's got to be done, period. For some people, it would be, you know, packing your clothes for the gym the night before, you know, things like that. And then later on, we start to introduce things like a short breath work session. And I prescribe that, depending on the person, a particular number of days a week. You know, for some people, we're going to start with just 3 days a week. And I call that basically, like with drug prescriptions, minimal effective dose. This is what we're going to start with. And I want them to have that degree of discipline that they're starting to develop and to show themselves that they can do that and to have those little wins and not to worry about what the scales are saying. You know, put the scales away. We're not going to look at it for the next 30 days. We're not going to look at your training log. I don't care how much weight you've been lifting, benching, squatting, whatever. I don't care about that. These are the daily habits that we need to start looking at, and we're going to get these wins and we're going to celebrate the success, and then we're going to build on that. And so 6 months down the road, making the bed is like second nature. It's like, there's no challenge there. Okay. So now we're going to step the game up, and you're going to look back and say, holy smokes, I can't believe I'm doing this on the daily now. Whereas before it was a struggle just to get up when my alarm went off without hitting the snooze three times. So it's exactly what you're saying. It's setting those goals, those baby steps, depending on where they're starting and the journey they're on, and what those might look like will be different. And you know, again, just kind of set those goals and those steps. And ultimately, I find that for a lot of my people that get serious and really embrace this lifestyle of personal development, as you mentioned, that's really what it boils down to as well, is they can't believe the person they become. You know, in a period of time of 6 to 12 months or whatever it might be, they don't even know who they are anymore, kind of a thing.
That's,
you know,
so powerful, man.
It's so awesome. And I have a couple follow up questions. One, who is this for? So if you were to like come up with a list of like the complaints that you hear most frequently from people who are struggling, what does that list look like? So if you're listening to this right now and you can identify with the list that Chris is about to rattle off, then you know he's talking to you.
First and foremost, anyone who is struggling with mental health, for sure, whether that is just a lack of motivation, mild depression, if it's something along the lines of anxiety, mild anxiety to moderate anxiety. If you're someone who's managing a household with a slew of kids, or, you know, you have a lot of responsibilities, if you're a business person, anybody really who's dealing with a lot of stress, feeling like they don't have enough time in their day, waking up in the morning, feeling like they can't get out of bed, you're struggling to go to sleep at night. And I think those are the big things. If it's someone who's dealing with more serious mental health, obviously you want to seek professional help with that first, and then maybe layer this in. And I think those are the main people, but I also want to include people who are dealing with physical challenges, health challenges. Trauma is a biggie. A lot of people that are dealing with trauma, whether they realize it's trauma-based or not, is a biggie. People are dealing with autoimmunity, which is another big area of research that, you know, people are dealing with multiple sclerosis, that they're dealing with, there's Hashimoto's, and the list goes on. If you're dealing with autoimmunity, that by and large is nervous system related as well. So anybody who's dealing with excess weight, struggles with staying consistent with a workout program, they beat themselves up because they've tried and tried to do something to get healthier, to get their health under control, to deal with their trauma, to deal with their autoimmune disease, things of that nature. From my perspective, anyway, the people I work with, that's who I reach out to. I think the broader answer is, if you have a pulse, these are things you probably should be looking into.
I was about to say, I think statistically, that's about 99.9% of the population.
You know, sadly, it is. In our culture, anyway, that is certainly the case. And so that's why I feel like it resonates with a lot of people that can understand, you know, I have a heck of a time going to sleep at night. I'm so tired through the day. I'm so tired when I go to bed, but still can't fall asleep. I'm tired when I wake up. My brain fog, that's a huge thing these days as well. And so those are certainly things that a lot of people can deal with. You know, then we can go to the other end of the spectrum. If you are a high performer already, this is still for you. You know, just because you got your shit together, excuse the French, but just because you got your stuff together and you're a high performer, you're successful in business and other areas, you know, this is still for you, because we can create more balance in your life so that you're not just at the big bank account and the success and the family and stuff, because most likely you're dealing with a lot of other issues in there as well.
Yeah.
Well, success doesn't make you not human.
Amen.
You know, I had the privilege of working with some pre-NBA draft guys. That was volatility on a whole new level. I mean,
a lot of pressure there.
I learned more from training those guys than I have with any other client, and they're the best athletes I've ever worked with. So,
yeah, I've had the privilege of working with some special operators, military, you know, people that are fire, or I'm sorry, police and things of that nature as well. So to me, they're kind of the elite type of people like you're talking about. And yeah, and I think, as you said, just because you're having some success, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the mind and in your body, and you want to keep performing at that level for a long time. You know, you can pull this stuff off when you're in your 20s, maybe in your 30s. But trust me, when I got into my 40s, I was like, the wheels are starting to fall off, even though I'm doing all this stuff. So I had to go even deeper into this stuff and make it more of a priority than the physical training. So for sure, it's for those types of folks as well. So we're going to do a breath work. There are numerous techniques for breath work. And the one I want to share today, I feel like is very impactful because it is big time in terms of downregulating your nervous system, lowering your stress levels. For anybody listening that may struggle, especially with falling asleep at night, do this for 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes at the most, and I can almost guarantee you're going to fall asleep. It works really well for just really getting downregulated, getting grounded, getting centered. And it incorporates, so it's called different names. I know it as Cadence of Bliss. So just with that name, how can we go wrong?
For the next few minutes, Chris walks us through a guided meditation. Because this exercise has helped us and so many others, we wanted to make sure you could access it as a standalone episode.
How do you guys feel?
I feel like I'm floating.
Relaxed.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. Cadence of Bliss. And that was just 5 rounds. We did a little mindfulness that led us into just a short little meditation on the breath that led us into the breath work. And that was 5 rounds of the Cadence of Bliss. And again, you can do that for 5 to 10 minutes. And, you know, even just 5 rounds can have a big impact.
I love it. Download that little bonus episode so that you have it and can pull that out whenever you need a little breather.
Absolutely. You know, if you don't mind me taking the conversation here with breath work, certainly something I'm very passionate about, you know, just doing those 5 rounds with a little mindfulness practice beforehand, what we're really getting into here is the nervous system. And a lot of people do get into breath work, get into practices. The Wim Hof method became very popular about 5 years ago with him being in the media and the news, and Vice did a big documentary on him that got like millions of views. And so that became very popular. And I've done the Wim Hof method. I've taken his online courses and so on. And that was one of my gateways. I had already known a lot about breath work. I come from a different background than a lot of people getting into it now, because I'd already had the background through yoga. And yoga does what's called pranayama. Mm-hmm. And in the tradition of yoga, pranayama precedes mindfulness and it precedes meditation. And so a lot of people, as I was saying earlier, when we get just right into meditation, the yogis knew it was best thousands of years ago that first we need to, you know, they start the journey with moral, ethical, personal hygiene kind of practices first, you know, then we get into yoga asanas and postures to move and strengthen and help get the body healthy and healed. You know, then we start getting into things like breath work. But with the breath work, the approach through yoga with pranayama, it was all about, you know, these nadis that go through your body and this prana, this life force that flows through these channels. And you know, there's a lot of evidence that shows that stuff is accurate. Take it fast forward, and a lot of people getting into things like Wim Hof, that's a very upregulating practice. And breath work is a direct influence on your autonomic nervous system, your sympathetic, parasympathetic systems. So that's your fight and flight is your sympathetic state or system, and your rest, digest, and reproduce is your parasympathetic state. And so the research validates that breath work alters those systems. And so if you're already someone who's dealing with chronic stress, you're dealing with autoimmunity, you're dealing with chronic inflammation, you're dealing with brain fog, you're dealing with a lot of things, doing something like a very vigorous, intense breath work practice, it can really create more problems. If you're dealing with a lot of anxiety already, you know, and maybe potentially even with depression, those kind of practices can actually be more problematic long-term if that's what your approach is. And I found that to be true for myself. And I just seen the difference in the impact that those can have. And so when we have a more specific approach and knowing where you are and what your needs are, or at least having then a well-rounded breathwork practice, because we did, we just activated our parasympathetic nervous system. That's all we did. You know, there's no voodoo behind it. There's no magic wands or anything happening while you guys had your eyes closed, you know, and you felt like you're floating, you feel more relaxed. All we do is activate the parasympathetic nervous system. And so when you get into that, it's, again, if you're a high performer, you know, if you are special forces, if you're a pro athlete, or if you're a business person or someone dealing with chronic stress, all we're doing is taking something that you're already doing, breathing. We're altering how we're breathing. And that's going to send a message to your unconscious part of your mind. Your unconscious mind is always running these stories, these loops, and always on the lookout for the threats and potential problems in order to activate that sympathetic state to fight or flight. That was our survival mechanisms that got us to the modern state that we're in. When that system is chronically activated, it's really challenging to shut it off. And that's where a lot of these chronic issues start to crop up, or problems in our relationships and things that we're impacted by. And so when we're in this chronic sympathetic state, and we can then take something as simple as our breathing, alter the count of the breath, if there's a retention of the breath, the exhalation of the breath, that will send that message to your unconscious mind that says, okay, there's no tiger sitting in the corner ready to pounce on me and kill me. Everything's fine. I'm good. And I can get into that parasympathetic state. So that's all we're doing is, you know, altering that. Now, if someone is getting ready to go in to a situation, they need to be energized, they need to be uplifted. One of the training programs I went through for one of my breathwork certifications, they categorize breathwork as whiskey, wine, and coffee. So who doesn't love that? Some breath falls into the category of coffee. It's stimulative, upregulates your nervous system. And sometimes we need that. A little tired in the morning, a little pick me up in the day, or whatever that might be. We need those types of breathwork practices.
Is that where Wim Hof would fall under?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And a lot of the breathwork that you'll see out there is that. And here's why, in my opinion. It's a little more sexy. A lot of people want the hard thing, and that looks hard. Wim Hof, they also, when you start, they have you time your breath holds. So there comes my ego in the game where it's saying, ooh, I held my breath, you know, because you do these deep, rapid breathing techniques, which that's actually a yoga technique that he basically rebranded because he's got a big background in yoga, which is another story. But you're taking these big, full breaths in and out through the nose. And what you're doing is you're altering your, increasing your kind of oxygenating your bloodstream. And so you'll get these tingly sensations in your face, in your fingers. And as he says, get high on your own supply. You'll start to feel like you're high on something. And so they do these big breaths and then they hold the breath. And what that will do then is your oxygen, your O2 starts to come down, your CO2 starts to come up, and you're going to feel like, oh my gosh, even on that 7-count hold we just did, you might feel like, oh my gosh, this is stressful. But then it's going to send the message to your brain. You just say, I'm fine. I'm good. We're okay here. And then it starts to shift your brain into that sympathetic, parasympathetic state again. And so that's a very up-regulating form of breath work for sure. Now, it does have a side effect to some degree of helping you feel calmer afterwards, but it's also very stimulative for a lot of people.
So don't do Wim Hof before bed.
I don't recommend it. And some people say it's great. I couldn't disagree more on that personally. First thing in the morning, for sure, for some people, yes, that is the jam. I mean, Wim Hof, it's a great technique when it's done correctly. You know, and then you don't get in the ego trap of, oh, I held my breath for a minute. Oh, now I'm struggling, but oh, I'm starting to like have these convulsions in my body because I'm trying to go for 2 minutes. And that is destroying the intention behind the practice, right? You know? And it can be very dangerous for some people that have underlying health conditions, blood pressure, and you know, other mental health issues. It can be problematic there as well. Whereas a lot of these others that are more parasympathetic, downregulating, which that then falls into the wine category, you know, it kind of helps to get you calm and more relaxed and that sort of thing. And I apologize. It's some people call it wine, some people call it whiskey. So we have our coffee, whiskey or wine, and water. So the other category is water, and those are kind of like they say, it's something that's good for you. It's more balancing and harmonizing in that sense. So we have some that really upregulate, some that help to downregulate, and some that kind of help to balance you out. If you're a little low, it'll bring you up a little bit. If you're a little up, it'll bring you down a little bit.
What would be an example of a water?
One of my examples I use is pretty popular, and it's why I decided if we were going to do one, I didn't want to share it because it's more common. A lot of people know about it. It got really popular in the media through the Navy SEALs training. They use this. I've seen it in the corporate world. I've, again, been in corporate fitness since 1996. But it's called box breathing. You may know it as another name. But box breathing is a very water category. It's very balancing. It's the idea of you breathe in for a four count, you hold it for a four, you exhale for four, you hold for four. You do that for 5, 10, 15 rounds. And that it's just a very balancing. It doesn't downregulate the nervous system much, but it also doesn't upregulate it very much as well.
I actually use that before I compete.
Couldn't have picked a better one. So that's perfect for competition.
Yeah, I feel like it's a heightened state of anxiety. You know, everything you're doing for multiple weeks of training gets regulated in 60 seconds.
Man, I'm so glad to hear that. That's awesome that you're doing that.
Yeah, it's just the only way you can get in there and not fear, but pay attention. You know,
absolutely.
You know what you have to do, but being scared is going to hurt what you do. So
absolutely. And that's how the Navy SEALs team started picking it up and their training and so forth. It was, you know, you want to be in that focus state, but not too upregulated or not too keyed up, but you don't want to be too chill either in those situations.
Yeah.
Super helpful. I mean, I learned a lot from you today. So thank you so much. Is there anything else? Any questions you have, Chris?
Yes. For Chris? How the heck do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, great.
Well, question. I appreciate that. At this moment, I'm actually transitioning my website. And so the easiest way to reach me right now is through my Instagram, if people have that, or Facebook. And it's just Chris Roach Wellness. So that's CHRISROCHE Wellness. And so it's Chris Roach Wellness on Facebook and Instagram. And my website, as I'm transitioning over to a new platform, is chrisroachwellness.offeringtree.com.
Beautiful. Awesome. Thank you so much, Chris, for being here with us today and giving us this amazing episode plus a bonus episode. Super excited for everybody to be able to use this tool that you offer. And please reach out to Chris if you want to get in contact with him or you think you can learn more from him. I think you are a wealth of knowledge and we appreciate you being here today.
Well, guys, I can't thank you enough. You know, I've done some TV interviews. I've done one other podcast over the years, and this was an incredible experience. And you guys got me really excited and energized, but also comfortable. So I appreciate that. And you know, all the success to you guys and the work that you're doing out there.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate Absolutely. That. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Redefining Resilience.
To learn more about building your mental and physical readiness, check out odysseyresilience.org.
And follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok.